Today's podcast is brought to you by The Underground Dojo. The Underground Dojo, located at 209 East Main Street in Collinsville, Illinois, has Magic, Pokemon, D&D, and all of your gaming needs. Give them a call at 618-365-6448 or check them out on Facebook at facebook.com/UDKCF. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of The Cryptic Commander. I'm John Nose.
This is Matthew Provins.
And we've got quite a few things to talk about today, guys. Matt, why don't you go ahead and start us off with page one?
All right, so I wanted to talk about a little bit about the price of double masters going with the normal boxes versus the VIP boxes. As the professor has talked about in his own channel, he's said that the prices of the normal boxes, as we've all seen, are going down, while VIP continues to just continually increase. And this is something that we haven't really seen with any master set before, that the actual box just continues to go down. That mostly has to do with the showcase card that comes at the top of the box, called your box topper, right?
Right.
You know, John, many times that box topper can determine the complete value of your box, whether you're going to make money or lose money. With the commons and uncommons being uptick to those rares in those showcase, I think that's really what's bringing down that value. And that's showing as these days continue to go on and the prices of the boxes continue to go down, while the VIP, where everything is foil and there's the two showcases and every small pack, you get those and you just pretty much guaranteed value in almost every single pack.
Well, I've got a surprise for the listeners. We've actually got a special guest with us today. And we advertised for this too, didn't we, Matt?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
We did, yeah. I made the first advertisement for our page. Go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hello, everybody. Can you listen to me just fine?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Perfect. My name is Emmanuel, or Emmanuel. Like, these guys are calling me, and I'm starting to like it, kind of. I'm the Overlord at the Sliver Hive, both on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. The Hive, the Sliver Hive, started as a YouTube channel where I just wanted to kind of, I don't know, it's about my love for Magic the Gathering, I guess. That's what the channel is all about. And now we have the Facebook page too, which is always full of memes and stuff. And well, I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Oh, absolutely. And please let everybody know where you're from, too.
Oh, I'm from Mexico City. Here we call it, not us, like the people who live in the city, but people from other states call it Chilangolandia, which is a very funny nickname.
Right.
So I'm a Chilango. That means that, like, there's probably Chile running through my veins or something. I don't know. I have never quite understood, like, the full roots of that nickname. But yeah, Mexico City, born and raised.
And I'm sure
actually born in the ugliest neighborhoods of Mexico City. But now I'm doing all right.
Yeah, it sounds like there's probably some more heritage into that phrase, you know, than meets the eye. You know,
the Chilangolandia. Yeah, probably. I think I should do a little bit more research. Like, I should be more involved with that kind of stuff. But I mean, it's just something that's sort of there, and you just go like, oh, okay, yeah, Chilango, all right, I'll take it.
I love it.
I love it. Yeah, you never wonder about it.
Emmanuel, can you put your thoughts and opinions of what you're seeing with double masters and the financial side of things?
Yeah, sure. It's actually quite interesting. Because I was actually talking about this with a couple of friends I have in here, well, here in Mexico. It's funny because when we heard about the product, the spoilers and everything, almost all of my friends always go like, oh man, I hate Wizards of the Coast. They're greed, knows no boundaries. it's going to cost $300 and oh no, God, and no fetch lands. they always get like super mad at the new master's products. And I don't know, it's been a while since I've been like angry, like truly angry about a product. Like, it's just like, man, no one is forcing us to buy this stuff, you know? It's like, Wizards of the Coast isn't putting any guns to our heads and, oh, come on, buy the VIP boosters and the Masters products and this and that. Like, we can choose not to, you know? So why are you getting angry? If you don't want it, don't buy it. I mean, some of these guys don't even play Modern or Commander. So it's like, why do you care? We were talking about this, and I was like, okay, so if I remember correctly, Ultimate Masters, when it came out, the price here in Mexico, it was like, let me remember, it was 6,000 pesos or 7,000, which is like $300, something like that. And I remember because I actually attended a clandestine draft at midnight in some store. I'm not going to reveal any names, but we weren't supposed to be playing that draft so early. So it was like some illegal stuff going on in there. I don't know. And I remember that the price was like $300 or something.
Wow.
And about a month later, it was already like $320. And then 3 months later, it was already $350. And so it's very surprising to me watching Double Masters, like Matt was explaining, like go down in price. I mean, it's not what I would expect or what I would have predicted. And I don't know if it's, I mean, I guess it's good if you want to buy a box, but I don't know. Like it's quite shocking actually, because it's usually the other way around.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with him, Matt. I think one of the weird things is he brought up a good point right there at the beginning. It's not for everyone. And I see this all over Facebook. And Facebook is great for social media. But usually when somebody, you know, says anything about, you know, oh, I dislike this or I don't like that, is somebody somewhere comes in and says, well, then maybe this one isn't for you. You know?
Yeah.
You had something else to go with that, Matt. VIP versions.
Yeah. So something that so many people are pointing out about the VIP packs is the container and the wrapping in itself. And some people have already fallen victim to this. But Wizards of the Coast decided to not put their logo on the shrink wrap this time, and it's caused some havoc with people opening the boxes and seeing what cards are in it, because within that plastic wrap that the cards are surrounded with, you can easily see each and every individual card, and then you can just reseal it and sell it out and keep the boxes that have the high value in it. This is causing like somewhat of a big issue now. I haven't seen anybody like really go into huge detail of it or anything, but the main thing is just, you know, this is a good reason to support your local game store. To support places like Card Kingdom and other places where you know that you aren't going to get gypped of any money.
Now I want to make sure to let everybody know there's no panic here. Emmanuel, have you seen anything over on your end about this?
I actually work very closely with a good friend of mine. He has a local game store here in the city, and I'm actually the guy that handles his social media, especially the Facebook site. And so far people are asking about Double Masters. I think it's already sold out, both the normal boxes and the VIP boxes. So no, I mean, this I haven't heard or I haven't read any messages from people complaining about any of these things so far. I don't know what will happen tomorrow or next week, I don't know, right. but so far, so good.
Yeah.
Okay. That's good.
Okay. Moving on to Magic the Gathering Arena, there was, the Historic Open or something that was?
Yeah, last weekend was the first ever Historic Open that Arena had. And, you know, there were some definitely great games there. The meta seemed pretty, like all the decks that were used in the main meta, though, seemed pretty similar. Like the top deck itself that was used the most was Bant Scapeshift, and that had a nearly 57% win rate, while the deck that was used the least had the highest win rate at about almost 64%, and that was Rakdos Goblins. So there's a lot of red and black going on here. There's many different, you know, goblin decks and mono red burn, but that's something that we expect in, you know, the historic area.
Yeah, yeah. And Jumpstart is still July 16th till August 16th. So we still got about a week left of that or so. And I know that there's one more event coming up on Magic the Gathering Arena called Festival Super Singleton. It's a historic format, August 8th, so that starts today, and it ends on the 12th, so you got 4 days to enjoy that. I haven't gotten on today to see yet, so.
Me neither.
Huh?
I said me neither, but I'm definitely planning on going on there later tonight and looking at that.
Okay. Magic the Gathering Arena has been confirmed for mobile, so I know a lot of people out there are going to get excited to hear that. We don't have a confirmed date, but we have confirmed that it is coming out.
So Amonkhet Remastered releases on Arena on the 13th. Amonkhet Remastered is going to be bringing 340 cards from both Amonkhet and Hour of Devastation into Historic. And I'm very personally excited about this, because they're specifically choosing to leave out a decent amount of cards that just aren't really seen play. So they're allowing, you know, players like us to have a higher chance of getting those cards that we really want and need to be able to use for the historic format.
There is a leak out there of the card list. Yeah, there's a leak out there for Amonkhet, even though they were saying, you know, it's a little Amonkhet, a little bit of the set afterwards. Anyway.
Our PlayStation.
Yeah, Hour of Devastation, that's it. And there's a list out there on the internet. If you just Google search it, there's an actual list of the cards that are in that set. There's no casting cost. But, you know, if you guys know your cards, you're going to know what's in this set. Wrath of God's in the set, too, which I saw. Now, I'm not going to say that that's been confirmed, because you know how spoilers are, but this is about as legit as it gets. And Emmanuel, what period did you get into Magic the Gathering?
When I started playing a little bit more seriously, like competing at FNMs and actually learning the rules and playing actual Magic the Gathering and not whatever I was playing before that, it was around Return to Ravnica. I was in college. I actually discovered Magic the Gathering, like, I don't know, 20 years ago, almost 20 years ago. I was a little kid, obviously, and I discovered it around the time of the Invasion block, I think.
Okay.
And the one afterwards, which was Onslaught, I think.
Okay, yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah, that sounds about right, because I was playing Standard when that was legal. Yeah, that sounds about right, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Well, yeah, the thing is when you – I love it. I'm sorry. I don't mean to cut you off. I just love asking
– Don't worry.
I love asking people and putting it on the podcast when they started. And the thing is I started in 1993, late 1993. Okay. And I didn't start getting into the FNM scene and then the regional scene. So back then they had regionals, nationals, worlds. I didn't start getting into that scene until 2006, 2007 is when I started getting, you know, really heavy into it, you know? So I'm with you, man.
Yeah, I totally understand, because, like I said, I discovered Magic the Gathering back in the days of the Invasion block and the Onslaught and all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. I remember my first few, like, how do I say it? Well, the first time that I approached, like, a local game store or some guys that were playing or something, like, they were complete D-bags, man. Like, really, really. It was a really negative experience. The, like, they totally blew me off, and they were like, no, this is not for you, buddy. Like, this is like some sort of amazing card, complex card game you're not going to understand because you're just a little kid, you know? And it happened like more than once. And if I was a completely different person, I guess I would have been like, okay, maybe they're right. I'll just look elsewhere. I'll move on. But no, there was something about the cards. It stuck with me. Like I don't know. It touched something inside me, and especially the Shivan Dragon card, the artwork. I remember that. I looked at that dragon once, and I was like, I want to play that game. I don't know. It's weird. I can't really explain it with words. Actually, I made a video about it. The video was about Donato Giancola, which is the artist for the Shivan Dragon of 7th edition. And in that video, I explained that that's pretty much why I fell in love with Magic the Gathering. You know, that dragon right there, I was like, wow, I really want to play. And it didn't matter to me that people were kind of dismissing me or something. Yeah. And when the first time that someone tried to teach me how to play the game, I remember that they used to play sorceries and instants like face down, like they were Yu-Gi-Oh traps, and they would turn them face up whenever they needed them. And I was like, wow, this game is weird, you know, like some guy would tap two islands, play a card face down, he will say go. And I would try to play a creature and they would reveal the card that they play face down and they will go, no, counterspell. And I was like, wow, that's a powerful card. So that was my first like introduction to Magic the Gathering. And like I said, it took almost 10 years after that, something like, yeah, because I was starting college, that I discovered that very near my faculty, there was a local game store. And I started going there, buying cards. I built my first serious decks. Someone actually taught me how to play the game correctly, like no face down sorceries or any of that nonsense.
Right.
And I just fell in love with the game, and I kept playing, kept going to the FNMs, got into the competitive thing, got over my I hate netdeckers face, all of that stuff.
We're getting ahead of ourselves too here. I remember personally me, and I can't speak for Matt or anybody else out there, but I know for me, and I've talked about this in previous podcasts, where I'll go to somebody's house and like really, you know, surprised they even know about Magic the Gathering in the first place. And then let alone they're sitting there and they're playing the game, and I just notice, hey, you guys, you know, you did something wrong. And I can explain to you how that is, why it's wrong. But then sometimes that can be an argument of why, you know, John's always doing stuff to make somebody win or him to win, you know, this and that. But no, it's, you know, you pick up on things, you know, like the abilities to use in response to somebody's ending their turn, you know. But
yeah, absolutely.
And the thing is, you touched something near and dear to my heart. I was playing Magic the Gathering since late 1993. When I brought one of my friends into the game was right around Stronghold. So that was in that invasion block you're talking about. And they came out with a card. Yep. They came out with a card called Dragon Arch, where you paid 5 and then you tap it.
Yep.
You tap 2 and you could take any multicolored creature from your hand and put it directly into play. So this was kind of like an elvish like an elvish piper or something. And I remember just putting down, you know, Nicol Bolas and stuff like that. And there was no format. We didn't know anything about formats. And we were doing fanking and wait, flanking and phasing from the Mirage, you know? So these were legacy decks, you know, I guess you would call it legacy. And we didn't know what we were doing because, well, I thought I knew what I was doing as a kid. I want to say kid, but I was what, 22 or something. Anyway, so I'm playing with those cards and I'm like, man, this is how phasing works. And I was wrong. And this is how flanking works. And I was wrong. And then a buddy of mine that I was teaching how to play Magic the Gathering. So you want to go ahead and talk about your YouTube and your Facebook group?
It's called The Sliver Hive. That's where I upload all of my videos and stuff. And I also have a Facebook page that is also called The Sliver Hive. And on the Facebook page, I share like memes and some thoughts, and obviously I share the links to the YouTube channel. And well, I guess if your listeners don't know who I am yet, because why would they? I'm a pretty new YouTuber anyway, so, well, at least in Magic the Gathering, I try to make content like for almost everybody, I say, because I don't know, I enjoy like so many different aspects of the game. Like, I like the competitive side of Magic. I like the casual side of Magic, you know, like brewing your own decks and Commander and playing Jank, all of that stuff. Like I said, what made me fall in love with Magic the Gathering was actually the art, you know, more specifically that Shivan Dragon illustration by Mr. Giancola. So I also talk about artwork in Magic the Gathering. I like, I guess almost everything about the game. I think there's always something for everyone to enjoy. And that's what my channel is all about, you know, like I always try to make everyone welcome, like a giant hive of slivers all around the world, you know? So,
yeah. Everyone, you heard him, go subscribe to him on YouTube, The Sliver Hive, and then you can find him on Facebook too and follow his Facebook page.
Yeah, Matt, when you told me you were going to have the guy from over at The Sliver Hive off of YouTube on the show, I said, okay, you know, let me go and look into this. Oh, wait, I know this guy. So I've watched your videos, and I remember, I remember your voice. And when me and Matt were talking in a meeting, I said, I know this guy. I watch his stuff. I love his voice, dude. And so I'm really glad that we did get you on the show, man. I'm really glad we got you on the show.
Oh, man. Thank you. It's such an ugly voice. I mean, it got crushed from years of screaming in death metal bands and stuff like that. Like, I guess I used to have a much sweeter voice, I guess. So after years of playing in thrash metal bands and death metal bands and pretending like I knew how to scream and do all of that stuff, this is the end result. So I don't know if you guys at home want to try this. Thank you. It's flattering.
I mean, nobody's voice can beat John's, but...
Oh, cool.
Yeah, John, I actually told this to Matt. Like I said, when I heard one of your episodes, I was like, man, John was born to do this. Like, he has this podcast radio classic voice. Like, it's just perfect, you know? Like, I couldn't picture any other sort of voice, you know? Like, it's perfect for podcasts and radio. And you should do, like, book narrations or something, too.
Yeah,
it makes me emotional because I've been told by so many people. Oh wow!
Because it's true, yeah. We cannot be all wrong. So yeah, you should try to. I actually, this might be of some interest to you. I don't know. I follow Dragon Shield on Twitter, the guy from the Sleeps, and they were looking for voice actors. I don't know for narrating their. Because they have like lore and stuff, right? From the dragons.
Yes, yes. Like, I love the lore. Yeah, I love the lore. I just got two boxes yesterday, purple mat and sky blue mat or something.
Yeah.
Different dragon stories.
A lot of people don't know this, but every time that you buy one of these Dragon Shield sleeve boxes, like it's not just a picture of a cool dragon, like. There's a story behind those dragons and there's lore and everything. And I saw on Twitter that they were looking for voice actors so that they could do something with the lore. I didn't pay much attention that day because I was busy, but I remember seeing something like that. So yeah, John, you should go for it. Like contact those guys and maybe you'll be the next narrator of the stories of the dragons from Dragon Shield, or I don't know.
You guys are making me blush.
Yeah, do it, John.
All right, we're moving on to page five. We're going to Hasbro News Reports. And there's just a little bit of information here. I don't want to bore everybody, but you got second quarter 2020 revenues were $860.3 million, down 29% on a pro forma basis. Now, strong customer demand for Hasbro products hampered by temporary store closure, product shortages in fast-growing categories, and lower retail inventory. There is one on here, Hasbro gaming revenue up 11%, and E1 Entertainment revenue negatively impacted by live-action production shutdowns. Moving on to a net loss of $33.9 million, or 0.25 per diluted share, excluding E1 acquisition-related expenses, severance, and purchased. Intangible amortization, adjusted net earnings were $2.7 million, or 0.2 per diluted share. Substantial liquidity and access to cash, including quarter-ending cash to $1.0 billion, operating cash flow of $258.3 million, and availability of $1.5 billion under revolving credit facility. Moving on to card of the day, Matt, you've got card of the day. What we got?
Yes, sir. Yeah, so today we have a card that the majority of people in Magic will know. They'll love it. Some hate it. Most hate it. Let's be honest. It's mono blue. It's Stasis. It's one colorless, one blue, an enchantment. It says players do not get an untapped phase, the errated version is players skip their untapped steps. At the beginning of your upkeep, you have to sacrifice Stasis unless you pay a blue. And this is just a card that, you know, has been played since the beginning of Magic. It comes from Alpha, and people use it in so many different decks. And I personally love the card.
Okay.
And
yeah, no, you know, I see where your love for the card comes from, Matt. And I want to move over to Emmanuel for a second, because what got me into the game was the artwork. You know, I was walking down a hallway in high school. People were playing this game for months already. I just had no interest, you know. During lunch, I would go in, what are you doing? They're keeping track of life points on the chalkboard. And the artwork is what got me. So I believe Stasis has been around for a long time.
Since Alpha.
And Emmanuel, do you have any memories of this card?
I have the worst memories of this card, especially at Commander tables. The local game store I was telling you about earlier, the one where I started playing Magic the Gathering a bit more seriously, I actually became very close friends with the owner. And that's why I work with him now, like managing his social networks and stuff. And there's also like a couple of players who are like regular players at that store, that they are some of the best players here in the country, like not just the city or not just this store, like they're some of the best players. I've learned a lot from them. They have gone to the Pro Tour like a number of times. They always do very well in national tournaments and stuff. Mm-hmm. So obviously, when we play Commander, they are not going to play like the big teamy monster commanders. Like they are used to competition and winning. And so they always play like Ursa or Yuriko.
Stacks.
Like CEDH kind of stuff.
Yeah, if we can take a step back and let the new players know that there is a thing called competitive EDH.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And that does exist, where these guys just get really, really, really hardcore, you know?
Yeah.
Every turn means something. There's no waste of space. There's no waste of a turn. And there's almost no fun if you're on the receiving end every time. You know,
it sounds like fun. You know, new players are going to be like, wow, I gotta give me some of that.
Yeah. I agree with you. And also too, while we're taking a step back, Matt, you mentioned the word errata, and I've tried to explain this to a few people. You want to go ahead and explain it to everybody what errata is when it comes to Magic the Gathering?
Yeah. So some cards get errated over time based on their text, which means that so there are some older cards that have certain text, like the original text in Stasis. I'll use that as an example. The original text says players do not get an untap phase. And today, when you use the card Stasis, it says players skip their untap steps. And that's just because it turned from a phase into a step. And that's just a change that sometimes occurs with rules, especially once again with the older cards coming into the new cards. A lot of cards people know nothing about when it comes to errata. And so I just recommend, if you're using an older card from the older sets, always go on gatherer.wizards.com and look at the text of the cards before you play it, just so you know you're playing those cards correctly. Because some things get changed.
Yeah, I remember first hearing about Gatherer back in 2000 or something like that, wasn't it? When they first came out with that database?
I have no idea, but that sounds about right.
Yeah, it's on wizards.com. You know, you go over to the Magic the Gathering website, people. You know, people know how to use the internet, so you go over to the Magic the Gathering website, and then which is it's weird. I know Hasbro owns it and stuff, but you can't get through it. I mean, you can get through it over there. They got a portal. But it's Wizards of the Coast site, and they have the Gatherer there, where there's a database where you can search by card types, colors, sets, keywords, rarity, almost like Magic the Gathering Arena for all the cards that exist. And last but not least, we have bans.
And more bans. Yeah, so Wizards of the Coast has officially set a new record in Standard Magic the Gathering.
Say what?
Yeah, they officially set a new record with the amount of bans occurring in Standard in 1 year. So the original official record was 9 cards. This year is 10 cards. And the newest cards banned were, I'm assuming most people know this, some players who might not play Standard might not know this, but it was Cauldron Familiar, Growth Spiral, Teferi the Time Raveler, and Wilderness Reclamation, along with joining the other cards earlier this year that were Field of the Dead, Oko Thief of Crowns, Once Upon a Time, Veil of Summer, Agent of Treachery, and Fires of Invention.
Now, I'm glad you're just talking about Standard right now, because a lot of other cards got banned in other formats too. This happened on August the 3rd, which was my birthday.
Yeah. Happy belated birthday, John.
Happy birthday, John.
Hey, thanks, guys. Thanks. But yeah, the bans happened, and let's just talk about the ones in Standard. I don't want to be, you know, I told you so and this and that, but a while ago, I listened to a lot of Magic the Gathering content creators, and I listened to it just like you guys listen to the podcast that we're doing right now. And I noticed there was a trend. Negative Nancy this, negative Nancy that. And there's, we need to ban everything in Standard. What? Really? You know? Now, just some of the cards. Now, I'm not saying they had to ban 50 cards or nothing like that. I'm just saying, you know, Fires of Invention, I nailed it. You know, Treachery, you know, the Agent of Treachery, I nailed it. You know, the Cauldron Familiar, I didn't think it was that big of a deal, because there's a lot of ways around it, you know.
Yeah, I think the main thing that they're doing is they're banning the power enablers instead of the super powerful cards themselves, it seems, a lot of the time.
And let's take a step back even further. They built this banning off the data they got from Magic the Gathering Arena.
Yeah.
That's not how they normally build their bans. And this is because of what's going on in the world. I get it. Yeah. I get it. Nobody wants to risk, you know. What do you think, Emmanuel?
Yeah, I'm a part of a lot of Facebook groups, especially for memes, because that's where I share my content and stuff. But yeah, I mean, it's been weeks now. I mean, come on, not weeks. Teferi has been like the most hated card, probably in years. Well, besides Oko, I guess. But, well, I don't know if people hated Oko. I guess they were just tired of the Oko mirrors. But Teferi itself, like, people really, really hate it, like, in any format, you know, in Standard, in Pioneer, in Modern. I remember Modern tournaments. When Teferi was a new card, like, what was it? War of the Spark had just come out. And I started playing Teferi in my blue-white control deck in Modern. And at that time, blue white control wasn't really like best of decks in modern, obviously. Like your most powerful card was Jace, which nowadays is like a very fair card, you know. He's already been surpassed by all the Okos and Teferis and Uros and stuff.
Yeah.
And I remember that once people realized like the true power of Teferi, because I remember a lot of guys were saying like, nah, come on, man. This is a terrible card. It's just good in the control mirrors. And I was like, okay, let's see.
Yeah.
And they were like, and once they try to play an instant or a combat trick or answer something, and they can't, that's when it hits them, you know. And they're like, man, I hate this card.
Yeah.
So busted. Like, what were they thinking? And Oko came out later, and I said it too. I was like, man, why does this guy have such a high what's it called, loyalty?
Yeah.
And it's green mana. I was like, this guy is gonna see play in Legacy. And everyone was like, no, come on, man. What's food? Like, what kind of crap is that? You know, like food tokens. What? No, it's terrible. Like, what is this? You know, like 2 months later, Oko is banned from all the formats in existence, and it's banned in Yu-Gi-Oh and Pokemon too. I mean, like, what was going on, right? And yeah, I mean, people have been complaining about the power creep.
Yeah,
I guess.
No, power creep's a thing. It's totally a thing.
Totally a thing.
If you look at this year alone, Commander, they're talking about this is the year of the Commander, and you go back and you look at these old cards from. Let's just bring up example, Ice Age. I mentioned Mirage earlier. We mentioned Invasion. You know, Matt's brought up Urga's Saga. The thing is, those older cards, there's a lot of people out there just like Ogre and a bunch of other people who are buying up collections and whatnot, just knowing that even 5 years from now, the cards we're playing with right now, like Teferi, and the new Teferi that you can do an ability of a loyalty action on your opponent's turn, okay?
Yes.
These are cards we're going to come back 5 years. We're just talking 5 years in the future. We're going to come back, and we're going to be like, wow, we threw those cards away. Like I did with Stoneforge Mystics, you know? And you're right about the Jace the Mind Sculptor thing. I don't want to go here and there, but you brought up a lot of good points, Emmanuel, you know?
Yeah.
And people really feel this. And yeah, bans. I don't understand how they're coming so more frequently, though. And let's move on to the ones. Don't you have stats on, like, Historic? That's bans on Magic the Gathering Arena. Modern, and isn't there other bans, too?
Arkham's Astrolabe, right? In what
yeah,
was it?
I had the Modern? Air bans up, too.
I didn't hear him. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so in Pioneer, we got banned Inverter of Truth, Kethis, the Hidden Hand, Walking Ballista, and Underworld Breach.
All the combo pieces.
Yep, all the combo pieces.
Yeah, Walking... Oh, man. Oh, man. Look, when a card's getting pushed out of every format, and the only format that's going to be legal in the cube, you know it's a problem. You know there was power creep. I mean, come on, man. You know, I remember pulling out a Modern deck, and this one kid goes, I can play Magic the Gathering. And I looked at him, and I'm like, okay, dude, let's go ahead and play. You know, I got this really powerful deck. It'll probably beat you turn three kind of a thing. And he had a red-white deck, and it was standard legal. And I didn't know that the dude even knew how to go to Friday Night Magic or anything like that, you know. And he had a standard legal net deck. It was definitely a net deck. And, you know, turn two, he had out, like, you know, 2 8-8s, you know. And I'm just like, man. And they're getting plus one, plus zero. I'm like, whoa, my deck's not going to be able to. You know, my deck was... standard legal a long time ago, so I just made it a modern deck, you know. And there's no way that, you know, 15-year-old deck with the limitations they had in those sets can compare to what is out right now. And even when I look in the future, it's like those cards are going to even be more stronger, you know. But they're going to want to come back, and they're going to want to get the pieces like the cards we're talking about now, you know. The Fires of Invention, the Once Upon a Time. Am I making sense here? I hope I'm making sense here.
Yeah, well, and another very surprising thing was that the same day that they announced these bans, they decided to suspend Wilderness Reclamation and Teferi Time Raveler and Historic.
Yeah,
I heard that. Instead of just outright banning them, they just suspended them.
Yeah, usually that's what they do. I think they've only unsuspended like two cards ever whenever they suspend them in the Historic format or whatever it is.
Yeah, well, they banned Nexus of Fate just 3 weeks previous and also suspended Burning Tree Emissary. But and then they decided to just outright ban Teferi and Brawl. So,
yeah. I mean,
That Teferi is quite something, huh?
Yeah, it is.
And supposedly he was only going to be good in the control mirrors. I was like, come on now. Do you know how big it is to not be able to play at instant speed in Magic the Gathering? Like, isn't that what the whole game is built around? Like, answers and combat tricks and stuff?
Yep.
You just slam that guy in the board and your opponent can no longer do that? I mean, come on.
It's supposed to have balance. You're right. It's supposed to have balance, you know? And I talked to one of my friends that used to be on the podcast in the beginning, and I asked him, I said, you know, there's a rumor there's a Future League. Okay. And I'm like, I'm just starting to believe there's not a Future League because how can they be testing these cards? You know, but you got to realize there's what, millions of cards, man, you know, or hundreds of thousands of cards or whatever. And then this guy next to him goes, no, wait. I work for the Future League. And I'm like, what? Like, what? So it exists. It exists. And I don't know. I don't know. There's just. How can these slip through and then get printed, and then boom, it's nice, like Lutri, you know, the gopher, whatever it was, it was banned in Commander before it even got printed.
Yep.
You know,
that was quite something also.
I wasn't surprised. It was a pretty ridiculous card.
So I mean, I don't know. I'm not an expert when it comes to the ban and restriction, guys, and I understand the whole 56% rule too. Go ahead. Oh, I thought you were going to say something.
Oh, no, I was just saying, yeah, I was agreeing with
you. Have you guys seen that famous, what is it? It was like, it was not a TED Talk, but it was like some sort of conference that Mark Rosewater gave years ago about designing games and more specifically Magic the Gathering. I believe that in one of the points he makes, he says that after years of making Magic the Gathering, he learned that he rather anger the audience than to bore the audience or the players.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this year specifically, like, I was thinking, like, wow, he really took that to heart.
Yeah,
you know, because and in the past few years, they have pissed a lot of people off.
Yeah.
And it's true. I mean, we're not bored. I mean, it's not been boring. It's been frustrating, I guess, for a lot of people and with all the bans and power creep and stuff.
But far from boring. And
far from boring. And like, I have a lot of respect for the people at R&D and Wizards of the Coast because they've been making this game for like more than 25 years now. Mm-hmm. And I think for the most part, they have done an amazing job. And I don't think, like, there's always like tough guys on the internet, and I mean, you can see it in the Facebook groups. Like, I believe Matt is in the same groups. He's in some of the same Facebook groups that I am.
Yeah.
There's always people like showing their custom made cards, and a lot of these people actually believe that they could do a better job than Wizards of the Coast. And you look at these cards and you're like, come on now. Come on, man. Are you serious? Like, you've never played Magic the Gathering in your life.
Yeah.
So I have a lot of respect for R&D and stuff.
Yeah.
And I think that they are bound to make mistakes. And this year has certainly been like, well, like record banning. That cannot be positive. But yeah, I mean, it's the people, I think people sometimes forget that it's tough, like making a game and keeping it interesting for 30 years. I mean, come on, that's gotta be tough, you know?
Great point. And I think the video you're talking about would be one where Mark Rosewater was doing Zendikar. And it could have been the second Zendikar, but I think it was the first Zendikar.
he brings a lot of points about the intricacies of making card games, and he was talking about, well, we learned that players like this and they don't like that. And if I remember, he mentioned something about Griselbrand not costing 7 mana, and then that angered a lot of people.
Yeah,
because Griselbrand is a 7/7 that draws 7 cards if you pay 7 life or something like that, and it costs 8 mana, and a lot of players were really angry. And I'm like, wow, like, why? Why doesn't he cost 7 mana? Like, it breaks the symmetry or something, no? And yeah, I mean, that video is actually quite interesting, and it made me respect all of these people even more. Like, they are obviously far from being free of criticism. Like, there's a lot of things that we could and we should criticize about Wizards of the Coast and R&D and stuff. But I mean, like, sometimes people get too carried away, you know, like they really, really get very, I understand that they get passionate about the game, but I mean, we should remember like that sometimes, like, man, come on, they've been doing this for 30 years. I mean, that's quite impressive. And there's been very few points in time where the game was actually boring. And I think that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I agree with that. And they try to push the envelope with innovations too, you know, the sideways cards, the split cards, level
with the Uro, the Okos.
Yeah, I mean, there's multiple times where I was so angry. I'm like, if they do this again, I'm going to quit Magic. And then they did it again, and I didn't. Here I am.
We've all been there before.
I believe so. Even everybody listening to this podcast has been there before. All right, guys. Well, I think it's going to do it for today's show. And, you know, don't forget, we got special guests coming on. We've got a bunch of people booked up. Right, Matt? We got what? We don't even have
all the way until October.
Yeah, I was going to say, we don't even have an opening for anybody to come on the show until October. And we've got, you know, Fridays filled up and Saturdays filled up. Okay, but we want to, again, thank our guest for today coming on over at the Sliver.
Oh, no, thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Of course.
Absolutely, man. And you guys go ahead and give him a view. Hit that like button for him. Smash the bell. Share it to your friends. And if you don't, the Crypto Commander, he's coming with one of those face masks. All right. All right.
Thank you, guys.
All right. We appreciate you coming on the show.
Thank you.
And Matt, for everybody out there listening, until next time, keep spell slinging.